And we were very, very fortunate, I believe, to have a friend of mine named Paul Lee that's gonna speak for us tonight. He knows a lot about staying sober, he knows a lot about having fun, and he's just a wonderful guy. I think you'll really enjoy it, Paul.
Yeah.
This is some motley crew here. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. My name's Paul Lee. And if you're new or you're coming back, welcome home. You're off the hook, and that's what was said to me a long time ago. I mean, I'm so blessed that I got here. And really weird, I mean, my head is spinning right now, and you'll find out why in a minute. Maybe, or maybe not. But like when Bruce was introducing me, he said, and our speakers do one, because he thinks that I have a lot of diseases. I'm a drug addict, I'm an alcoholic, I'm schizophrenic, I'm manic depressive, I'm bipolar, I'm tripolar, I'm all of these things. So when you get me here, I am more than one person. But let me tell you what, this deal is the real deal, okay? If you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and you're sitting here on a Friday night in South Florida, one of the resort capitals of the world, and you're in a freaking Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, listening to a mental patient, I'm gonna make an assumption you've got some issues in your life. Like you're not really on top of your game if you're sitting here. So if you wanna like start playing the new game, this is the deal, okay? Man, I'll tell you what. It's really a privilege and a blessing to be here tonight. And I know that John, you know, is doing the steps 1 hour a week. How many people have been here for those steps? Great. Yeah, I know, because they take you from the TC, right? Okay, well, here's the story. Wherever you come from, I don't know where you come from. You just come together, right? They say it's time to get on the van. That's what you do, but here. The bottom line is, I know John told you that you come here, there's 12 steps, and you come here every week for 3 months, right? That's how you do the 12 steps? Is that it? Well, here's what we're going to do tonight. It's 7:20. What time does this meeting end?
8:00.
How many minutes does that leave from 8 o'clock to 7:20? There's some smart people here. How many?
40
minutes. How many steps are there?
12.
That leaves us 3.5 minutes per step. Because here's going to be the goal after tonight, okay? We're going to finish all 12 steps. So you can tell whoever the bosses are, where you live, or whatever they tell you. Paul E. told us that we finish the 12 steps tonight. Football season just started, and you stay home and watch football or wrestling or whatever you want to do, because we're going all through 12 steps tonight, okay? Fair enough? We'll cut right to the chase. Why wait? Why bullshit? Let's just do it. Okay, here we go. 12 steps, and anything I say, believe me, I was taught, I got sober by the grace of God in this clubhouse. Right over there, my mentors, Fred T. and Ray Allen, they sat and I begged them because I was so desperate. And if you have that gift of desperation and you're really tired of, how many people have been in more than one rehab? Oh my God, that's a shocker. No, I'm serious, because I mean, I really know that, because a lot of people use their insurance card like a Black American Express card. Oh, I don't like this rehab. I'm going to go up the road. They're on the water. They're paddleballing or equine therapy. Anyway, lest I digress. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. In my case, other substances. Looking at this crowd, in your case, other substances. We can't safely do anything that's going to affect us from the head up. That's a truth. And a truth can never be changed. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict the day I got here. I'm gonna be an alcoholic and a drug addict the day I die. I cannot safely pick up the first one. The second half of that first step, that our lives had become unmanageable. When we're brand new, obviously our lives are unmanageable. We're sitting here, we have nowhere to live, we have no clothes, we're wearing Boston Red Sox and Patriots shit. I mean, yeah. Oh yeah. That's why people that root for Boston know how to go to detox, because they drink when you lose. Every person I ever met from Boston couldn't get sober. They said, we're going to get sober when we win. And they're still in freaking detox. They're war fans. So, and that's just a side issue, sort of. Because in case you have a hearing problem, I'm from New York. But, so in any case, that our lives had become unmanageable, that's a fact. And when we get here, that fact is 100% true. We stay here for a little bit of time. My life today, by the grace of God, is no longer unmanageable. Why is that? Because it comes to the second step. We find the manager. We come to believe that a power greater than myself, that I choose to call a manager, I choose to say that's the reason I've been able to not pick up for a very long time after I couldn't stop. I mean, I tried every method known to man. I was really at Woodstock. I know a lot of you read about it. Your parents were probably there, or your grandparents in some cases. No, there was no one from Boston there. Easy. We let you get off the thruway, but we didn't let you on the farm. And anyway, I was rolling in the mud in Woodstock. That was 1969. That was the last time I enjoyed getting loaded. You know, like that song by Jackson Brown, 65, I was 17, 69, I was 21. That's my age. You could do the math and figure out how old I am. I know you chicks are looking. He can't be that old. He must be lying. He's still a chick magnet. Well, probably right. Bruce has my number if you get really lonely. And desperate and really want to throw your life away further, get it from him. Anyway, so in 65, you know, the way I look at my story to some, I'm not going to tell a drunkalog or a drugalog, because the last person I heard say that was still in high school 45 minutes later, but I'm not going to do that. Okay, in 1965, I'm from Queens in New York City, and the Beatles came to Shea Stadium. Everybody heard of the Beatles?
Yeah.
That's great. Well, we went into Shea Stadium to see them, and I woke up 15 years later. That's my story. Those 15 years were a nightmare. Matter of fact, the first 4 years were pretty cool. Only a couple of arrests, one overdose. But from 65 to 69, I was on top of my game. I started a riot at a Doors concert. No big deal. I mean, really, they didn't perform long enough. I thought everybody should throw their chairs. And I told them that. And I woke up in the 111th precinct that night. In any case, I got down to Florida after five arrests, five mental hospitals, two overdoses, one suicidal coma, 6.5 days. I was pronounced dead. So by the time I got to Florida, it was like I was done, but I didn't know how to admit that I was done. I didn't know what to do about it. By this time, I was already on disability insurance because I told you I was a mental patient. And no, I say that with all respect and pride because, is anyone here from New York? Huh, well then, this should just cut this part up right now. My last residence in New York State was Creedmoor State Hospital. It's a freaking prison hospital where when you're a kid and your parents are driving you to the beach, they point and they say, if you don't straighten up, that's where you're going. Two things I need to tell you. No one ever went there but me. Definitely nobody ever got at it. I was in there with a guy who stole a horse in the 30s. He didn't know what his name. He would dress up in a suit. His name was Moses. Smoke a pipe. So by the grace of God, I'm at it. Anyway, so I don't have any problem with the second step. All right, but here's the important thing. So I moved down to Florida, and I'm on disability. I really don't know what I'm doing. I don't know where I'm going. And one day I read an article in the newspaper. This is when my life changed, began to change. And you'll understand in 60 seconds why. You had enough, Bobby? I thought you were a recovery queen or something. I don't really want to hear about it. In any case, because they don't realize I get sidetracked and I totally forget, but in this case I won't. So I read an article in the Miami Herald in February of 1980. And it was an interview about a brand new program that had just started in South Florida. There was one meeting. and the name of the program, which was borrowed from Alcoholics Anonymous, was called Narcotics Anonymous. There was one meeting in all of Broward County. So I cut out the article, because the interview with these two people, they were sober in AA, and now they're clean, and it was my story. They'd been to prison, they were on methadone, they overdosed, blah, blah, blah. And I made a phone call. And there was no hotline, there was no helpline. There were seven people in Narcotics Anonymous in 1980. Seven. I made a phone call. Someone answered the phone, and they gave my number to some guy. And this guy called me back to offer to take me to a meeting. And he took me to the meeting. And I walked into the meeting. The whole way down there, I was abusing him because he was telling me about the perils of cocaine in Broward County Jail and how he got sober. And I looked and I said, you know what we do to people like that in New York? I mean, really, the redheaded guy, the muscles. I mean, really, he was like everything my mother always wanted me to be. And and he's driving me to this meeting telling me like about desperation. So I walked in the meeting and I wasn't going to stay. I don't know if anybody's ever been somewhere, maybe you're here right now saying, what am I doing here? You know, I sat there and I said, what am I doing here? It was a dark little room, downtown Fort Lauderdale, St. Francis Mission. And I went up to Curtis and I said, you know what? Thank you, but I'm leaving. And if I ever need you, no, the child support will be coming. Don't worry about it. I promise. Check's in the mail. I mean, really. Honest to God. So I told him I'm leaving, and this is where God first entered my life. Looking back on it, I didn't say it at that time, but at or about 8:28 p.m. on February 12th, 1980, I'm walking out of the St. Francis Mission in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and at that exact minute, not a minute before and not a minute later, in walked a guy that I shot heroin with in New York City, from my block in Whitestone, Queens, New York City. His arrests were in the paper, just like mine. So we were in this little thing. As I'm leaving, we hug each other. I walk back in, I sit in the front of the room, I get a cup of coffee, and Mark is sitting up at the front table. And Mark was sharing his story. He'd been asked, just like Bruce asked me, he'd been asked by the chairperson to speak that night. I didn't need to listen to his story. I lived it with him, but I'm going to tell you when I paid attention. He sat in the front of the room, and he said, I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink or a drug for 6 months. I could sort of wrap my arms around that, because Mark, just like myself, couldn't go 6 weeks. I mean, I couldn't go 6 days. Matter of fact, let me just qualify that a little bit. The only time that I refused a drink or a drug is if I misunderstood the question. I mean, I wasn't the kind of person that said, oh, no, thank you, I've had enough. And looking at the faces here, this doesn't look like I've had enough type of crowd. By the way, that's the way I treat my sobriety. I haven't had enough. Okay? And as was promised me, by great sponsorship, great mentors, great people that put their hand out, that this thing keeps getting better and better. And you think it can't get any better, it gets better yet, because there's no end to the good. Otherwise, I wouldn't be coming here 34 and a half years later. I'm clean longer than most of you are old. Doesn't mean you can't still love me, but but that's another outside issue. Craig, don't laugh that loud. You know the truth there. Anyway, so, but the real God part of this story, I was blessed. I picked up one white chip. I haven't had to go in and out. Now, if you're bouncing in and out, it's okay, but stop. Because at some point in time, you bounce in, you bounce out, you bounce in, you bounce out, you bounce out, and you die. You bounce in, you bounce out, you bounce in, you bounce out, you bounce out, and you kill someone in a car crash. You bounce in, you bounce out, you bounce in, you bounce out, you do some Mickey Mouse stuff and end up in prison for 15 years. That's Curtis, who just got out of prison. 15 years. I want to give him a hand. Curtis, put your hand up. And I want everybody, or as many people as possible, please go up to say hello to Curtis. Because without Curtis, I'm not standing up here. He took me to that first meeting in 1980. He was sober 3.5 years. He made that choice. And I love him, man. We've been in communication. I visit him and everything. And he's here and he's back with us. And Curtis, you know I love you. And you're back on the path, man. And that's all we can do. And so, you know, that's my God doing that stuff, okay? That first meeting with Mark Freeman, God rest his soul, he died sober this past year from cancer. But we did this 33 years together. And Mark walks into that room and I listened to him. And I picked up that white chip, and then I thought about it. I said, wait a second, what are the odds of this? Two Jewish junkie alcoholics from New York City in a Lutheran ministry in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, at the exact minute that one is leaving me to go continue killing himself, the other one is walking in to share his experience, strength, and hope. That intersection, that divine intervention, that perfect timing, which I've come to know, not believe, not question, know and trust, that's a power much greater than me. I choose to call God. I don't care what your issues are with that. And you know what? In the next 10 steps, in the next 30 minutes, we're going to talk a lot about God. And if God causes you to run out of this room, booze and drugs is going to scare your ass right back in. So my suggestion is come to believe in something. My first coming to believe was I can't, we can. Someone had a t-shirt on at that first meeting. To this very day, I can't do this alone. So my God has skin on him. Some days my God is Mike, some days it's Ron. Some day Craig says something and I say, oh wow, that's the way it works. So I keep coming to meetings because I keep getting it. And the more I get, the more I have to give. And I treasure my life today. And from this mental patient, dysfunctional human waste who disappointed everyone on planet Earth, I have a lot of respect today around the community here in New York. Why? Because I don't hurt people anymore, physically, financially, emotionally, spiritually, because I can't pay the price anymore. I try to do the right thing. The more I try to do the right thing, the more good stuff happens. It's quite a concept. Anyway, So I began this coming to believe process, which is the second step. And for me, I don't know what it says in this book. By the way, this is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anybody ever see it? It's got a blue cover. No, I just put another cover on it, but great reading material. Talks about every one of us. Talks early in this book that we're a group of mental defectives in full flight from reality. If anybody can identify with that, well, you probably belong here. I would suggest read this. It's quite an interesting read. The third step, not to get too mumbo-jumbo, because this isn't what this is about. From the second step straight on through, my opinion, sponsorship is the second most important thing to getting Alcoholics Anonymous. Getting that sponsor. What's a sponsor? It's a guide. Someone who's been down the road, sober, worked the steps, seems to have a good grasp on life, and you want him to help you. Now, I know for all of the rocket scientists like us, to tell someone we need help is very difficult until you're at the bottom of the barrel. Until you have what my sponsor, Fred T, always said, be grateful you have the gift of desperation, which I still have today. And it was many years after he was dead, I realized the gift of desperation was G-O-D. I didn't know that. And G-O-D is the answer to the whole deal. Not on a religious level. I mean, No, I told you I'm a mental patient. Anytime there's quick movements. No, you don't understand. I'm very serious. I could jump over this thing. I may seem old and fat. Part of that is true, but I mean, shock treatments, you can't be doing that. Please, work with me. So anyway, the third step, We made it. No, she's moving. She's going like this. That's the way my first wife got me. She went like that. I was so high. I couldn't step on the glass at my wedding. I couldn't find it. My first wedding, that was. So anyway, the third step, it says, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Don't get too mumbo-jumboed about that. First of all, speak with your sponsor. Second of all, my opinion. Everything I say up here is my opinion and my experience. Taking that third step prayer simply says, I want to go on with the rest of the steps. And that's all it is. I mean, really, don't, like, God has never come into my bedroom and said, yo, Paul E., here's the exactum, the lottery, the fantasy five numbers for tonight. No matter how many times I buy those lotto tickets, I don't even get one right. Ron and I bought it the other night. I don't buy these things, but he's downstairs with me. So I bought it, and I looked the next morning, and if you want to really feel like a loser, keep buying me lottery tickets. Because I don't know, has anyone ever met anyone that won the lottery? It's the biggest scam perpetrated on people like us and people that need money. Oh, maybe I'll hit it big. Yeah, go ahead, keep hitting it big. Just keep showing up here on Fridays. So now we really get to the deal, okay? 12 steps, it's a total of 200 words. And the closer I could put my life in conjunction with those 200 words, the happier I am. The fourth step is the first one, in my opinion, we really have to do some work on. By this time, you're going to meetings, you're sober a little while, you're speaking to your sponsor. I mean, here's an example. Sponsorship is very important. My second sponsor, maybe we'll get to my first sponsor, but Fred T. said to me, he says, Paul, I want you to call me every day. I want you to call me every day at 5:30. Just let me know where you went that day and where you're going that night. All right, Fred, no problem. So I called him every day for a year and a half. I didn't miss a day. I called, and now my life is getting better. If you're sober a year and a half, or even 6 months, congratulations. Who was that, Lena, Rena, Gina? I knew that, you see? It only took me 3 times. I'm not quite that old. So if you're sober a little bit of time, your life's gonna start getting better. So my life's getting better. Now I have a year and a half. I'm living at the Bay Colony Club on the Intercoastal. I'm sponsoring people. I'm driving a Z car. And I call Fred every freaking day. So I come up here one Sunday morning. I said, Fred, you know what? I'm pissed off about something. He says, really, what's that? I said, Fred, I've called you every day for a year and a half. You haven't called me once. This was the response. He wore these little glasses. Without missing a beat, he looked at me. He says, you know what, Paul? As soon as you have something I want, I'll be sure to give you a call. And he walked away. Now, if someone did that today, you'd be on the phone to Intergroup. Do you know what they did to me? They started loving my inner child, my baby. I can't believe it. Shoot your inner child and get sober, okay? The bottom line is the fourth step. We take an inventory, and a lot of us have a lot of issues in a lot of different places, okay? You know, there's really three things, money, sex, and power, okay? PMS, power, money, and sex. Not on a personal level, we got it too. Power, money, and sex. And the only problem I ever have in sobriety is power, money, or sex. Not enough, too much, wrong kind, wrong people. I mean, the whole nine yards. So as a matter of fact, here's a great story. This woman was sober, getting sober for a while. You don't want reporting you, do you? So this woman's getting sober. It wasn't Bobby, it was another woman. And she was having trouble with relationships. And she couldn't, like, stop ending up, you know, after she's sober a few months, she couldn't stop ending up at guys' houses. I mean, I don't know if anyone can identify with that, but if you can, this is what happened. She finally gets sick and tired of waking up with this guy, and she calls her sponsor in desperation, and she says, Betty, I can't handle this. I got in another guy, and I just can't take it. So her sponsor says to her, well, what I would suggest is you read page 69 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Coincidentally, that's the page about sex. I didn't write, this book was written in 1935. Okay, and it says, all right, and now we about sex. Some say more sex, less sex. We don't want to be the judge. God alone can judge. But here's what happened. This chick, the new girl, was so confused about what her sponsor said, she got home and thought her sponsor told her to read page 96. Let me share with you what happened. No, and this is what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, that I never forgot this. Here, page 96, big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, when her sponsor told her the resolution to her sexual problems, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Wait, girls, hold on. Search out another alcoholic and try again. Big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But here's the real key. Wait, wait, girls, time out. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. Just look around, girls. Look at the foreheads at S-I-C-K. S-I, that's the desperation. So imagine that poor girl. She was doing what she thought. She called her sponsor, and she was so shocked that she ended up with that information. So you write a four-step. None of these steps are forever. We took a personal inventory. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory. Is that what that is? What does it say up there?
Yeah.
Is that close?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, of ourselves.
Of ourselves. Yeah. You taking my inventory?
I always do.
Anyway, and then we write it down and we share it with a sponsor. Okay? We admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. You know, if I write it down, I'm admitting it to myself. If I believe in God, then obviously he's watching it. So why do I need to tell anyone else about it? That's my thinking. Because a big part of the humility part of this program is sharing these tumultuous, embarrassing, disgraceful, disgusting things that we've all done, and sharing them with someone else because it lightens our load. Fred always said to me, a problem shared is cut in half, and a joy shared is doubled. The way this works, we need each other, what I said earlier. And there's not, I remember this Connie Coyne, God rest her soul, 25 or 30 years ago, was doing the steps of the 12-step house, and I remember it like it's yesterday. She was standing at the podium. She says, listen to me. There's only so many ways with so many people or so many farm animals that you can have sex. So don't be afraid of sharing it. She says, I've done it all. And we all have, because we're all. I mean, really, when you're out there using and drinking, I mean, come on. One of my apartments in 1967, my furniture in the living room was wall-to-wall mattresses. Not that I was that much of a chick magnet, but I really was. And we didn't matter because they were higher than I was. Keep in mind, and Curtis can attest to this, I got sober, I was 145 pounds. Size 31 waist. I walked in here wearing a three-piece blue suit, a flowered Huggy Bear shirt, and a pimp hat. And I had an attaché case, and I had to walk. Let me tell you something. It wasn't too long before you found out there was nothing in the attaché case. And there was really nothing under the hat. So I thank God I was beat up enough to be willing to ask for help and to be willing to follow directions. That gift of desperation is so important. That unconditional surrender is so mandatory. It's so necessary. And the only way that happens and continues to get reaffirmed is by attendance at meetings. I go to more meetings today than they recommend that you go to when you're in treatment or have it. Why? Because I love the deal. I told you the way I drank and drug. I couldn't stop. Well, that's the way I sober and clean. I can't stop. I love this. I love to watch it. I love to watch the miracles. My friend Ron from New York is down. We know each other 35 freaking years. He's sober 32 years. He's staying with me. We're doing some things. Today we were out, hanging out at my pool, Now, keep in mind, the only way I could float anymore is in the Dead Sea, where it's all salt. Because if I try to float in my pool, I'm underneath, I'm done. But we were standing there talking to some of my neighbors in the condo, because I like life, I like living, I like smiling, I like joy. You know, my sponsor would always come up here and tell these great stories. So I'll tell you one story, which I never forgot. And he's dead 11 years, and the testimony to him is that not a day goes by I don't talk to someone about him, think about him, or say something that he said to me. So here's one of his five stories that he told for the almost 50 years he was sober before he passed. There was a 6'6" wrestler, and he married a 5-foot-tall little girl. They went away on their honeymoon. He gets up to the honeymoon suite. He decides he might as well establish the tone of this relationship from day one. So he takes off his long overalls, and he throws them across a bed at her. And he says, here, why don't you put these on? She says, what do you mean? I'd be swimming in those. There's 3 times my size. He says, that's right. I want you to know from day one who wears the pants in this family. So she sits down on the bed. She thinks for a minute. She reaches under her tiny little miniskirt, pulls off her tiny little panties, and throws them across the bed at him. She says, here, why don't you get into those? He looks at her. He says, what do you mean? I can't get into those. She says, that's right. And you never will until you change your attitude. So that's what this thing's about. It's an attitude of justice. You know, whatever you think was the deal is not the deal. And laughter is just so freaking important, because the war is over. The war is over. Once you're here, not to say you're not going to have pain, misery, and degradation sober, but the war is over. So you share this fifth step, and now you're into the sixth and seventh step. And this is the growing up steps, okay? We were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. What defects? The ones we wrote down in the fourth step. I've never met anyone to this very day that's entirely ready to remove all their defects of character. Maybe you have them give me a call, because I'll show them how they're not. Because there's some things I still like hanging on to, whatever it is. And the only perfection is God. So we're never going to get there while we're on this earth. We try to get a little better. Some of my defects are serving me pretty well. And I'm going to keep participating in them until they stop working. And that's the way I change. And if you're sober for any bit of time, the only time you're going to change is pain. Nobody starts saying, running to their sponsor, I need to work the steps. And you're happy, and you got the honey in the bed, you got the big house, your big car, and you're making a lot of cash. I don't even want to talk about any steps then, because I got it working. Me and my honey, we're traveling. I'm driving the big car. We got the big house. I'm pulling up to the club, parking my car in the front of the meeting so you can see how well I'm doing, because it's about ego, man. And that's what this program is about, ego deflation. So when the pain of the pain gets great enough, then the pain of the change is not that tough. And that's what the sixth and seventh step are. And we're going to be on the sixth and seventh step, if we're not drinking and not using, till the rest of our lives, God willing. And we get to the eighth and ninth step, and this is just something that I was taught. You know, like the second step's get ready, the third step is go. Fourth step is get ready, fifth step is go. Sixth step is get ready. Seventh step is go. Seventh step, it says, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. The shortest step, 7 words, the most powerful. 7 pages in the 12th step and 12th tradition book. The most powerful step. I have read that over and over and over and over, because I keep getting into pain and pain and pain and pain. And it's all about her and her and her and her, because that's the only pain I've ever had. I don't give a shit about money, but when you take my heart and step on it, whoever you are, you too, Gina, whoever you guys are, and you just grab my heart and tromp on it, that's when I'm sober and I can't leave my house. I'm in a freaking fetal position. That's when the seventh step is really needed. That's when a sponsor is really needed. Not when I'm skipping through the tulips, okay? So the bottom line is, you stay sober, you're going to work the seventh step. You're going to have to. Okay, and then we get to the eighth, ninth step. Get ready, go. The eighth step, you made a list of all the people you screwed over. Said people we have harmed, I'm giving you the new vernacular. All the people you screwed over. You know who I screwed over? Every person I ever met. If you met me between 1965 and 1979, I owed you something. I don't know what. Might have been physical, might have been financial, definitely was spiritual, could have been emotional. Whatever way I could get you, I was going to get you. Man, woman, child, didn't matter. Relatives, parents, kids, didn't matter. Because I was a desperado. I drank and drugged to live. I lived to use, and I used to live, and I couldn't stop. So what happened when I walked in here, all of a sudden, that incredible obsession, that thing that I couldn't stop thinking about 24 hours a day, waking up thinking about where I was going to cop, what I was going to do, how I was going to going to sleep, maybe nodding out, waking up, and the same thing the next day for 15 freaking years. And then I get here, and I go to that first meeting. Something happened. I didn't pray to have it removed, but something happened. It was gone. I haven't thought about getting loaded since February 12th, 1980, but one time. And that was in August of 1980 when I had 6 months. But we're going to have to do that another week, maybe when Bruce brings me back to do the 13th through 24th step. No, which we'll do, but that's, you got to be sober 6 months. You guys. Anyway. Sometimes I think I'm such a laugh riot. I can't stop laughing at myself. Matter of fact, my sponsor Ray always used to say, when you're really depressed or you're feeling bad or she left you or he left you, go to the mirror and just say 10 times real fast, smile, God loves you, smile, God loves you, smile, God loves you. And you know what? By the time you say it 5 or 6 times, you're laughing at what a moron you are. So that's what I'm going to throw out there. Smile, God loves you, smile, God loves you. All right, so now we get to the 10th step. And what's the 10th step? By the way, all of those people that you... Who loves me?
We do.
I love that. I love women, too. My wife's in New York. So. I'm not judging. I'm just saying. Anyway, so we get... All right, easy. Focus here. Focus! So the 8th step, the list of the people we harmed, those are the people we wrote down in the 4th step that we shared in the 5th step. And the 9th step, we go to make amends to them. And you need a sponsor for this. You can't come up with this yourself. You need a sponsor, okay? No ifs, no ands, no buts. Sometimes if you sit too close when I'm speaking, these women, no matter how old they are, they get these hot flashes. So that's sort of what happens. That's part of the price people like me have to pay for staying sober. That's okay, because I've learned to deal with it, okay? Now the 10th step, it says we continued to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. When it says we continue to take personal inventory, it means we took the inventory somewhere, doesn't it? Where did we take the inventory?
Fourth.
Fourth step. We took a searching, a fearless moral inventory. So now you're through 5 more steps, you're feeling good, your life's in order. Of course you're going to want to continue to keep the crap out. It's like cleaning the garbage. It's like taking the garbage out every day. Because if I don't and I let it stack up and it's there for a week, I'm in trouble. My house will be infested. I'll be infested with the whatever it is that you get infested with if you don't bring the garbage out. What we're all infested with when we get here. Shame, misery, degradation, humiliation, reprobation, incrimination, and all of the other nations. Rock and roll nation, Red Sox nation, crack attack nation, you know, the whole... Thank God I got sober before crack. That's all I can say. I got sober BC before crack. Because I know I wouldn't have been a lot of fun out there on that pipe. I promise you that. I see what it's done to some of you. I have enough freaking damage from the shock treatment. The crack I would not handle. So now we get to the 11th step. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Where did we first start to make this contact? Second step, we came to believe. Third step, we turned it over. So now we're through all of the rest of these steps. So obviously we're going to want to improve it because we're liking the way that we're feeling. We're liking what's going on. So we saw it, and it tells us how through prayer and meditation. What are we seeking to improve? Our conscious contact, what we started in the second step with God. What are we asking for? We're only praying for knowledge of his will. What do you want me to do? And the power to carry that out. That's how I'm here tonight. I've got the power to carry that out. And then we come to the 12th step. And everybody is here because of someone performing a 12th step. Some way, somehow, whether your parents called the treatment center, whether the cops said enough's enough, they sent you to Maureen's. I mean, whatever they did, the fact of the matter is, if you're here, it's because you couldn't handle being out there. I know my grandmother, God rest her soul, prayed me into this thing. She was the only one in my family that believed. She was an Orthodox Jew. And she saw what was happening to her first grandson, and she couldn't handle it. Because I was a good kid, man. I had a good future in front of me. And I disappointed everybody and everyone that loved me, that came in touch with me. I promised you and disappeared. Because that's what we do. Today, when I tell you something, you could pretty much take it to the bank that I'm going to do it. Real simple. You don't have to text me. You don't have to call me. If I give you a commitment that I'm going to do something, you could take it to the bank. And here, by the way, I was laughing sitting down here, 34 plus years later, to show you how slow alcohol exchange, I got sober right in that seat, the end of this table. That's where I sat every day. I mean, I came every day. And I look up here, 34 and a half years ago, there was a mistake in this 12th step. I told them 34 and a half years ago, because it says, having had a spiritual awakening, as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. Read the freaking book, these morons that run this club. I went up to them, I said, read the freaking book, this message. What message? The 12 steps before that. 34 and a half years later, I'm sitting here, they still haven't changed it. I don't know who they are, but if you know any of them, share that with them. And that's the joy of living. No matter what, I want to stand from the rooftops and I want to shout what's been given to me. I want to share it. You deserve it. The more I give you, the more I get. And the last thing I'm going to say, only because Ron's here, and I don't know if anyone's ever been thrown out of an AA meeting, but I was in New York by Ron's sponsor. This guy, Bernie Sachs, got sober with Ray Allen in Brooklyn in 1956. And I would always pick up my running partner, Michael, to bring him to this meeting, and Michael would always upset the meeting. So one weekend, I fly up there, and I walk into the Saturday morning meeting without Michael. And Bernie looks at me like any old-timer, and he says, where's Michael? I said, Bernie, I decided that I was only here for the weekend. Michael really doesn't want this thing, so I'm not picking him up anymore. And if he wants this thing, he knows where we are. Bernie, the most serene, sober guy you're ever going to meet in the world. Back when there was smoking in the meeting, he had this big cigar. He stood up in the middle of the meeting at the top of his lungs. It was the only time I'll curse. He said, who the fuck are you to decide when someone is going to get this gift that's given by God? As a matter of fact, get out of here and don't come back till you have Michael with you. Michael, by the way, died 11 years sober. Thanks for listening.